This podcast is brought to you by
Don't Stop.
In today's high-tech, fast-paced world, you need a wonderful website to promote your business. You have a vision of how you want it to look, but you need someone with the skills to design it. Isn't it comforting to know that David Webb Designs not only has the experience to create a professional site, but he's ready and willing to listen to your ideas and suggestions? He'll work with you every step of the way until you're happy with the final design. That's davidwebdesigns.com. Don't just dream about the perfect website. Get it with davidwebdesigns.com.
Stop.
You are listening to David Allen and Liz Stone.
Shall we begin?
I got to say, just hearing you guys speaking and hearing all the innuendos, I had sparkling water in my hand, and now there is tequila in my hand. So
of course.
I've joined the party officially. You transformed me in 4 minutes.
Let's begin now.
Let's unstrap your bra, draw the bath, and get ready to get unleashed. David Allen.
I have to say this, and then we'll get off the baloney pony, but I just think that it's so unique that he deserves a song, even if it's like a 2-minute skit just about baloney pony.
Liz Stone.
That's my secret. That's not your
secret. Did you just make that up? I want that. Oh, my gosh. Robin S., is that you?
Now you're getting in the mood for Unleashed.
I don't even know what to say. I'm speechless.
What?
Welcome to another episode of Unleashed. I'm Liz Stone with my larger-than-life co-host, David Allen, the gayest gal pal on the talk show circuit. Want to get in touch with your feminine side while listening in on what the boys have to say? You've come to the right place. Today we have the pleasure of interviewing drag queen extraordinaire, Miss Tempest Du Jour.
Oh, I bet you say that to all the queens, Liz. Thank you for that wonderful intro.
Only you, hunty.
I am very excited about tonight's show. Talking to Tempest Du Jour, one of the season 7 RuPaul's Drag Race queens. No one's talked to her yet. She's like a virgin.
It's an exclusive. We have an exclusive.
This is an Unleashed exclusive. So
that's right.
Let's welcome her to the show. Hi, Tempest. Welcome to the show.
Hi, everybody.
Hey.
Let me tell you, Big Mama's coming to blow in and blow hard.
Love it.
Now, Tempest, may I call you Stormy?
You can call me anything you want, darling, as long as you call me.
So welcome to Unleashed. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Tempest. We're so excited to talk to you.
Well, thank you. I mean, what do you want to know besides I'm like the giantest drag queen you'll ever meet in your life?
I know, six foot six inches. What the hell?
I am flat-footed, so I say like with heels and wigs, I'm talking to Jesus, is what I say. I mean, I'm up in the clouds, girl.
Make sure you tell him I got something to say. So the next time you see him, tell him I need to talk to him.
She get in line, sister. She's got a list of things to work out.
So tell us, Tempest, you are a college professor at UA, correct?
I am, yes.
So what do you
teach? I've been teaching. Well, I had the costume design program in the School of Theater, Film, and Television, but I teach a variety of subjects, everything from like costume design to history courses in clothing to drawing and rendering and costume craft stuff. We make masks and armor and jewelry and things like that. So all costume related subjects.
And so how did you wind up getting into drag then? I just don't understand.
You know, they seem such separate worlds, don't they?
Oh my God, I know. And you're also a
kid from the theater who wanted to do drag. Can you imagine?
And you're also a dad. Tell us about being a dad. That's great.
Being a dad is the greatest thing that I've ever done and will ever do. I grew up in this very conservative Mormon family, and and went to Brigham Young University. I went on my 2-year mission. I did the whole Mormon intense thing. And then did like whole reparative therapy to try to be straight for many, many years through the Mormon church too, which didn't work out so well. But I guess I was always raised around these big families, and I have a great family that I come from, and kids is just something I've always loved and loved being around. And luckily I met a wonderful man who shared the same ideals as me, and we became adoptive parents and foster parents and have 2 of our own now.
2 children. Wow, good for you. That's outstanding. Now, Liz, I think you're a Mormon too, aren't you?
Well, no, I'm not a Mormon, but speaking of the whole Mormon faith, I'm just wondering, did you have Sister Dragwives? I mean, that's kind of what was going through my head.
I'm looking for drag brothers, actually.
Okay, well, that's good.
Drag men, yeah. No, I'm fascinated by the whole polygamous culture, actually. There's a little act I do to Madonna's song Erotica, where I pay homage to the fundamentalist Mormon sect of population, so... You'll have to come see that sometime.
Can you imagine, though, seriously, with all due respect, taking turns? It's like, okay, honey, it's your turn tonight. You're on a schedule. And then, you know, you get them Tuesday. And, drawing straws, flipping coins.
I know. You know, have you seen the show? Have you seen the show, the Sister Wife show?
No, I'd like to.
I watch it like a train wreck.
Yeah. Oh, that's the one. Oh, on television. I thought you were on a play or something.
No. Sister Wife is like a TLC show or something.
I know.
And,
I know. I have.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like watching a car wreck. Like when you see a cow poop on the side of the road, you've got to watch it. You can't turn away from it. And
yeah,
it makes me wonder,
well,
because you have these women.
Too.
Right. But he has these wives, and it makes you wonder, like, does he say, okay, do I want to, can I cuss on this? Can I use profanity?
Sure.
Absolutely.
It's like, I imagine him sitting there thinking, do I want to fuck the fat one tonight, or do I want to fuck the fat one tonight? Or do I want to fuck the fat one tonight?
It's like a human Whitman sampler.
One tonight?
Right? It's
what?
Like a human Whitman sampler.
When I invite people to come on our show and they talk about me like that. That is just so incredibly rude. Thank you. See, Liz, you win every time. You even get the queen, Liz. Thank you.
I do. I want to know how Tempest got this beautiful title, Delicate Flower of the Desert. Do tell us all about that, Tempest.
Well, it's kind of obvious. well, you know, here's the thing. I am like the most unlikely candidate for ever doing drag. I'm a 6'6" man. I mean, I come from this conservative Mormon background. I'm older than any queen in the history of everything. I'm the oldest queen to ever be on RuPaul's Drag Race. And everything was sort of against me. And so you have to distinguish yourself somehow. And I'm like, actually, one of my sort of drag mentors was the first person to give me that subtitle. And I thought, my God, that's the most perfect thing ever. You know, when you meet me, there's nothing delicate. Have you heard the rumors?
Don't play dumb.
Oh, I thought I did, but I think they're saying something else. But I'm not going to tell you what I thought they were saying.
All I know is I went to logotv.com, and Tempest, I loved the answers you gave to the audition questions. They were fantastic.
Well, thank you.
Why don't you enlighten us? I want to ask you, who was your first celebrity crush?
Well, according to my mother, it was Bernadette Peters.
Oh, I love Bernadette.
Wow. I love her too. She's great.
And my mother claims she didn't know I was gay.
Oh, how sweet. How
precious. That the most, like, gay-centric celebrity you could ever think of in the 70s, right, as a child of the 70s?
Yeah.
Bernadette Peters.
That is very true. And usually the mothers are the ones the first to know, too. They're actually usually telling you, hey, listen, you're gay.
Right.
I hate to break it to you, but you are.
No, there was a lot of denial in my household.
I loved your choice of favorite queens from the. I know you mentioned you had two favorite queens, but I'm sorry. It's a Latrice Royale blockbuster. How about Latrice? I am in love with Latrice.
I'm so in love with Latrice, and I don't know if you've ever spent one-on-one time with Latrice, but she just, I mean, like Crisco from her pores. She just oozes like love and joy and just warmth. She's an amazing girl.
Does she make you want to slap your mama? Is it that
she
good?
She made me want to eat some biscuits and gravy is what she wanted to do.
That's right.
You know, she's the real deal. She's had a real life. She's had some tough times. And there's no pretension to Latrice. And the same with Chad, who I love as much for different reasons.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Maybe, you know, they're older and wiser, and maybe that's why I can relate better, but I love those girls. I just love them.
Now, since we're on the RuPaul Drag Race topic, I know we're not allowed to ask you a lot of questions about it, but has it
changed? Well, you can ask. I just can't answer.
How has it changed your life since just being in the promos and being out as like, oh, this is new season 7 queen?
Well, it's insane. I mean, there's no way to sort of prepare for it. And I know this sounds all cliche, but it's so true. Like, you go from sort of a small town, you know, popular drag queen to, like, you know, I remember the first 24 hours after the cast was announced, and I think I got like 5,000 friend requests on Facebook.
Wow.
From all over the world. I mean, and it was funny, as you could see, as the news hit different time zones, it was like the Pacific Rim starts friending in, and then you know, the Australians, and then the Japanese, and then the, you know, Brazilians, and the, and it was, it's just, it's, and people write you and tell you wonderful things, and they love you, and you're beautiful, and then there's people that write you and tell you you're the most horrible thing that's ever happened to drag, and, you know, so you take the good and the bad, but it's just bizarre that people know who I am.
How does that make you feel?
Yeah, how does it make you
feel? Well, it's what you work for. I mean, I didn't start drag to, you know, play to 20 people in a room, you know.
Okay, right.
I feel like I have something to offer and something to share, and for me, drag is like this, like can be this amazing sort of communal experience where the audience is all together with you, and that's what it's all about to me. It's not about being the prettiest girl. And
even your name Tempest, I love this. I've really studied your bio. I mean, I just love to read, and I took Shakespearean courses in college, a lot of literature,
mm-hmm.
and I love the fact that your name Tempest is based on the very, you know, infamous play by William Shakespeare. Of course, that's where drag all started, right? I mean, they had the men dress up as women, and so good for you. You're part of history.
Well, that's what, you know, if you're smart enough to know those things, I mean, that's where the word drag comes from, dress as a girl.
Absolutely.
A Shakespeare
reference,
right?
And
it's just such a part of my life, my other part of my life in academia and as a freelance designer. I do so much Shakespeare work, and it just seems so apropos to who I was. And the word itself just has so much, like, meaning, you know. It's an
mm-hmm.
action word. So,
oh, yeah.
And I'd never met another queen named Tempest, so I thought, I can't believe no one's ever used this name before. So,
Liz, I'm gonna quote you for a second. And this is the difference between you and the other queens, and we had discussed this before we even interviewed you. The fact that you have is amazing, because if you came on the show and I said to you, can I call you Stormy? You go, I don't know what that means. I was just going to hang up. Because it was just like, okay, well, this is just Camp Drag, and this is all it is. You get some of those drag queens where they're just like, well, I tuck it and I go on the air, and that's just what I do. So it's nice to know that you're like a professional. You know, and I just love it. Everything about you is great, and I really do hope that you take home the
prize. I'm so flattered by that. That means a lot to me. I appreciate that.
Beauty and brains. I would have loved to have had you as a college professor. Do you ever step into classroom in full drag just to give them a thrill?
No. I mean, let me tell you, I've been tempted, but now it's kind of like, you know, if you ain't paying me, I ain't putting the clothes on.
Amen.
So, you know,
that's right.
Mm-hmm. Mama got to make a coin. It cost me to get dressed, though. Until they add that extra, you know, part of my salary at the university, I'll stay in civilian
clothes. Right. On your contract, you should have weaves as part of your, you know, annual heels and duct tape, whatever else you got going on.
They love it, though. I got to tell you, though, like, when I, you know, we were on Christmas break, sort of when the announcement was made, and my first class that I came back to after break, I walked into a class with 50 students, and they all applauded, and it
That's
really
wonderful.
Made me tear up. It was
awesome.
Like, you know, oh, captain, my captain, and
yeah.
It was a beautiful moment. It was really cool, and my students come to my shows, the other faculty come to my shows, they all know, you know, what I do and who I am, and I just, it's a cool environment to be in. I'm very lucky. I was born in North Carolina, and my mother still lives on the coast of North Carolina. I'm actually in North Carolina at this moment, talking to you on a business trip. So I'm actually sitting in a hotel room in North Carolina. But I do love North Carolina, and because it's sort of my homeland, you know. It's got its flaws, but where it doesn't have flaws, you know.
How many times did you audition for RuPaul's Drag Race before you got called back?
I auditioned four times.
Four
and
times.
And twice I made it into the, like, pretty far. That one of those times I actually made it into the top 20, where they picked the 14 from. So I was really close a couple of times. And, you know, perseverance pays, so I kept trying.
That's awesome. And is that your favorite reality show?
I don't know. I'm a self-professed reality show whore. Like I just want to like loop myself in reality shows, and any of them. I love like My Strange Addiction and all the housewife shows and all that bullshit. I live for it.
So what is it about the reality shows that you love so much? Because I personally, I mean, I think it really dumbs us down, to be quite honest with you. Like a Honey Boo Boo or, you know, like a Hoarders. Like, I can't stand watching Hoarders because it just freaks me the hell out. It makes me want to clean, actually.
When you find seven dead cats under your couch and a live possum, it's time to clean. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, that was literally on one of the shows. But I don't think it dumbs. I don't think it dumbs dumb people down. I mean, it dumbs dumb people down, but it doesn't dumb smart people down. Because
that's
I think
true.
The reason I watch it again is, like, the same reason I'm, like, attracted to people like you know, the freaks of society. I mean, I want to see extremes. I live a pretty normal life, besides the drag part. But I have my own reality and my own struggles, my own bills to pay. And what I want to see when I relax and watch TV is something that I don't live. I don't experience myself. And that's, you know, New Jersey Housewives flipping tables and you know, all that bullshit that goes on that I can't really relate to, but it's such comedy to me. It's so funny, all of it. The guy that
did
was fucking
like
his car, did you see that one?
No.
I'm like, My Strange Addiction, there was like the guy who was in love with his car, and he would make love to his car, and of course he was gay, because of course we got to put the gay, you know,
right,
gay community down even farther by showing this freak who fucks his car is gay. But
now, Liz, you were telling me a story about a guy screwing a shark, right? Were you married a shark or something like that?
No, it was a dolphin, and he claimed the dolphin came onto him because it slithered around him. So, yeah, he was taken advantage of by a dolphin. That's wonderful, right?
Everybody knows dolphins are the whores of the sea. You've got to be
they
careful.
Are, honey. Tuna of the sea, right?
Wow.
Chicken of the sea. Those damn whores, I tell you. I love the story about the guy that got bucked to death by a donkey because the donkey didn't want it, and listen, no means no, all right? Just leave the donkey.
And that's in every language, including English and animal.
Right.
Right.
Poor donkey. If he only knew English, he could have prevented the whole thing.
Exactly.
What do they see? Oh,
the donkey.
Wow.
To buck him.
That's right.
Now,
oh,
I feel like
the lesson to be learned is if it doesn't speak English, you can fuck it. That's the lesson I took from that.
Wow. I see.
What if it doesn't speak at all, though? I mean, we got to draw the line here somewhere.
That's what fists are for.
Do you think that the reality shows is like a connection to your own struggles to see, like, okay, I'm not the only one in the world struggling right now like this?
Well, I think that, you know, to be honest, you know, how real reality shows is sort of varies from show to show, right? And they're all super manipulative situations, but isn't life sort of manipulated in a lot of ways too? I mean, you're always answering to somebody, and there's somebody always in a position above you who controls in some ways what you do and how you do things. And I mean, I don't know.
That's true.
To me, I think you've got to be, like I said, smart enough to sort of separate like what's real. Like you watch the Kardashians obsessively and you start to think that that's your reality. And I'll tell you the down part of all that bullshit is, the students I see nowadays, most of them I call generation entitlement, because they think that they don't have to work to earn anything. They think that they can be a Kardashian or a Paris Hilton and be rich and famous from nothing. And that drives me crazy. That's the downside of all this.
All it takes, well, it's the Kardashians that started this mess with all it takes is a sex tape to become famous, you know. And really, and you could probably attest to this as well, you know, I mean, we're just a little internet radio show. We're trying to come up through the ranks. You know, you're a small-town drag queen who is also trying to come up through the ranks. And it sucks because back in the day, you actually had to work for your contracts. And you had to work for your money. Now it's like you just go on a reality show, American Idol, The Voice, whatever, RuPaul's Drag Race, and all of a sudden it's like, boom, there it is. And that's where the sense of entitlement comes from, I think.
Certainly. I agree with you 100%. I was just telling some people today, they were asking me about the show, and I said, look, the 14 girls you'll see on our show are not by any means necessarily the most talented drag queens in the world. We're the lucky 14 that got chosen to be on this season. And make no mistake, there's people who, you know, it depends on how, you know, the term talent is relative anyway, but there's more entertaining people out there than what you'll see on the show. We have the stories they wanted to tell this time, so don't mistake that as, you know, the way it's got to be, and we're the end-all be-all of what's talented
right.
in the drag world. We're not. We're just a peek into a certain segment, right?
Right, and don't get me wrong, I absolutely love RuPaul for doing the show. I mean, Liz and I have been a fan since season one. We know
mm-hmm.
all the queens. We've had them on the show in the past. And,
yeah,
they may not be the most talented, but it's cool to see, you know, like Latrice Royale's story, how she was in prison, how she, you know, just kind of came up through, and to see all the different queens and their stories, and I think that's where the connection comes in, too. And it also really put drag on the map, because before Drag Race, it was just like you thought of underground clubs and men in dresses, basically. Now this gives you a full detail.
It absolutely did that.
Right.
No, I agree
so
with you. And
that.
You know, it does actually a great service. I mean, I've had, you know, 5 or 10 emails or messages from kids across the country. I just got one from a kid in Georgia who says, you know, I'm 14, I want to do drag, but I live with my grandparents and they'll kick me out. And what do I do? And, you know, I really want to do it. And, I mean, it breaks your heart. But, you know, when we grew up, we didn't even have that option of talking to people about it. And much, you know, being gay, much less drag. And
right.
and if I can help a kid, I mean, you know, I'll do whatever I can. And if I can make your life easier or offer a bit of advice or, you know, to see someone like you on TV. You know, we were adults before we ever saw Will and Grace and saw anyone on TV who was like us. And
right.
and what a gift to have that, these young kids now, it's so normal, and it's just, it's a gift. It's a great thing for them.
I think it's crazy, too, looking at the generations. I'm pretty sure between the three of us, we've all come from a generation where, you know, it wasn't accepted. It wasn't talked about. I know, Liz, you were in Catholic school for a while. I mean, I'm sure there was never any mention of being gay there.
You wouldn't even know. And I had a very dear friend in the neighborhood, and he was very, his manners, everything, he was very flamboyant, but I adored him, but I could tell he was persecuted, and I felt for the guy, I really
yeah.
did. But he's one of the sweetest people I've ever known in my life, just a very gentle soul. So I think I'm thrilled to see things having changed over the generations. It's just, we really need to try to love each other more. I know that sounds very idealistic, but...
Well, it's true. And now, you know, the problem now is complacency. And, you
know,
someone just recently asked me, like, what's the biggest problem in the gay community today? I said, it's complacency. With these kids, it's always been okay now to be gay for these kids.
Well,
they
honey,
don't know what it was like when we had to
it's
hide.
It's human nature.
And,
right. They don't know. They don't know what it's like to have gotten the shit beaten out of you walking home or, you
right.
know, the severe hate crimes. But so I guess... work well done, right? But yeah, it's important to continue
sure.
to stay aware. But I need to ask another question because this
yeah.
is so exciting. you had mentioned, okay, it's okay. I got to do this because I was checking. In fact, I watched you like 3 times. I was really getting into you there, Tempest.
You're awesome.
Your video on Logo TV. It was a feast for the senses. Now I'm going to ask you, who would be your guest dream judge on RuPaul's Drag Race?
Well, if I'm going to answer the same as I did on the tape, I've always worshipped Dolly Parton as sort of deity. I just think that she is something beyond this world and beyond human. She, to me, she's like...
The Queen Mother
fly.
Of the Universe?
She is a little bit between you and the universe.
David interviewed her on Unleashed. I have to tell you that he got to
You're
talk to her.
You're kidding me.
I'm not. David, take it away.
Yeah, honestly, Tempest, if you get some time after the show or from now till like when you're done here, go to getunleashedproductions.com and just click the previously on. And I did. She was one of our very first interviews of this season. It was awesome.
Wow.
Or
oh,
actually,
Sharon
Needles, actually. How funny was that?
I love Sharon.
I know,
but
fabulous.
Yeah, Sharon's a smart girl, but I've never been that close. I mean, I actually the closest I've ever been to Dolly is several years ago. I was working in this theater, and this woman had worked for Dolly at one point, and she, unbeknownst to me, she called Dolly, who signed a headshot 8x10, and to me personally and had it sent to me. And you should have seen me scream like a 12-year-old girl when I opened the mail. It's in a frame in my office at work, and it's like a little shrine around it.
I think she's so cool. She was an awesome. I mean, she took the time, and you know, she just got off tour from her Blue Smoke tour. She sat down with us, and it was just so wonderful for her to do that. So I mean, she's truly, and those are the artists that we're missing these days too, because she's truly an artist. Like, she's truly and not just money, and you know, we had a little run in with a really popular celebrity who will remain nameless, who basically told us to go F off because we're not big enough for them. So it's just like, you know, I could talk to Dolly Parton, but I can't talk to you. That's just a thing.
Yeah. Well,
it's like when worlds collide. I think Dolly came up through the ranks and she gets it, right? You talk about the sense of entitlement. I think people that really never had to pay some dues, it's unfortunate. But I have more respect for someone like Dolly that has a real human side. And it's she came across as so genuine. So it was a pleasure. We were very lucky.
Absolutely.
Yeah, all that talent and brains, like, wrapped up in that campy, kitschy package. That's
isn't it wonderful?
To me. It's perfection.
I know. It is. It is.
It's what
she's
I hope to be.
She's the ultimate contradiction. She's as sweet as pie, you know, a good down-home church lady, but then she's got the body that'll just knock you on your ass.
Right. And the wigs and the...
for days, right?
Cheap-ass dick clothes, you know, that just stoned and sequined beyond with fringe and shit. I mean, come on.
How many drag queens do you think dress up like her? Do you think there's a lot across the country? Right now, at any given time, how many Dolly Partons are strutting around the clubs? Oh, my God, wrap your head around that for a minute.
Look, I'll tell you, the best Dolly Parton impersonator in the world is Kenneth Blake in Vegas, who's also from Tucson, Arizona, by the way.
Oh, wow.
Who moved many years ago to Vegas to do Dolly, and he is amazing. Amazing. Yeah.
That's great.
So who is your favorite person to lip sync to? Like, what is your favorite person to do, impersonate?
You know, I don't really do impersonations. I don't, because I can't. Some people have asked me that a lot recently, and I don't really look like anyone. It's really hard for me because I don't think I, you know, when you're a 6'6" man in a dress and a wig, it's like, who can you be? Your options are limited, you know, there aren't that many. You know, I'm like,
well,
German,
how about when you perform?
Women's rugby
team? Do you sing live? I mean, what do you do? Okay, all right.
Occasionally I do. Yeah, and my favorite thing to do is I have this monthly show called Retro Game Show Night.
Okay.
Where we redo like 70s game shows.
Hotel Congress, right?
Yeah,
heard
Hotel
about
Congress.
This.
It's amazing. Okay. And it's like, We've been running for over 3 years now. We've sold out every house for 3 years, and we turn people away at the door. It's become so popular, and our audience is straight. It's the wildest thing.
Fantastic.
And it's all, you know, it's like 18-year-olds, and then it's like 80-year-olds. It's this big cross-section of people, and they just come to have a good time. It just happens to be hosted by a giant drag queen, you know?
When you say retro game show night, is it like do you do trivia, or give us a little taste of what it's about?
I'll tell you, we have about 10 games in our rotation right now. We do a different one every month, and like, we do Wheel of Misfortune, and we have our own wheel.
Oh.
It's all very professionally done because we're theater people.
Of course.
And we do Sass Word, and every Halloween we do the Addams Family Feud, and
that's fun.
We just did like the $9.95 pyramid game. We do, you know, it's takeoffs on games.
Living the dream. I love it.
It's
fun. Do you write this stuff, or is this something like you created, or was it something you approached?
We do. I have a little team. There's a little team of about 4 of us that got together 3 years ago and decided we wanted to create this. There was nothing like it. And because we were just tired of the you know, I was doing a weekly drag show at the time that I called Honey Baked Glam. And it was a traditional like lip syncing drag show, but the more and more I did it, the more I ended up on the mic just interacting with the audience, and that's sort of that's my shtick. That's what I do best. And and so this evolved out of that. So I still do the lip-syncy stuff, but this is what I love to do, is the audience interaction.
Did you enjoy being on RuPaul's Drag Race? Was it a great experience for you?
It was. It was amazing. Yeah. It was, you know, that if you watch past seasons, you always see the girls, like, break down and go crazy and cry hysterically and all that stuff. And now I get it. Now I get why they do that. They're not crazy. It's
so
just
we can
really
expect a lot of tears this year, this season.
I didn't say that. I'm just saying that.
So what you're saying is the best reality show on television, right?
I think you would be a fool not to watch season 7 of RuPaul's Drag Race. Yeah.
Oh, we're not going
to
miss it.
This point,
yeah,
so,
it's going to be great.
Certainly
it's
not
a great season. The
so
girls with you are hilarious.
Switch gears for a second, Tempest. Before we let you go, we ask our audience to go to getunleashedproductions.com and click on the confessions link. And what they do is they basically send us these burning, itching questions. And sometimes, you know, our guests have the cream to suit that. So we were hoping that you can answer one of our questions tonight.
Oh, certainly.
Okay,
I'm a specialist in burning and itching, so go ahead.
Are you ready for this one, Professor? Okay.
Sure.
All right, here goes. When my boyfriend takes me out to dinner, he always expects sex afterward. I'm okay with because he's a nice guy, but he never says thank you and we're done. Other than his manners, he's great, and I'm happy we're together. Am I being petty and overly sensitive? My first husband never thanked me either or appreciated me, so I guess it's a sore spot. How should I approach this without jeopardizing everything else? Signed, hesitant to speak up in New Jersey.
Oh, Jersey. Girl, let me tell you, first of all, this is a multi-part answer. First of all, there's never an excuse for not saying thank you. Never.
Okay.
And that's the Southern girl in me. You always say thank you. Even if it's not a great time, it's just courtesy, right?
Yeah.
But you shouldn't be expecting, I mean, look, if he's taking you to McDonald's for the Big Mac, number one, supersize, you might get a finger in the ass. But if you know what I'm saying? But you better take him to a nice place if you want to get laid. You know what I'm saying?
You might get
a little tongue if you buy me a Frosty after the Wendy's. But,
I have the vapors, Miss Scarlett.
If you want to get plowed, you better take me somewhere good. There's not a chain.
Wow. Okay.
I want dessert and a cocktail.
I think you should endorse like high-end restaurants because I'm telling you, they'd be flocking there, right?
Well, I'm available.
There you go.
Well, now,
mama does love to eat. I'm not gonna lie.
I've never heard of anybody being thanked after sex, like Liz said earlier today. What did you say, Liz?
I said, personally, I think she ought to be thanking him.
Right. No, I don't know that you need to thank someone after sex, but if they've done something nice for you, if they've taken you a nice meal, if they've bought you something, if they've written you a nice note, there's always, you know, courtesy should be standard. You shouldn't even question that.
I wonder if first marriage fell apart, though.
Nah, you shouldn't be expecting, like, food for sex. I mean, what are you, like? You, like, Ethiopian? I mean, come on. What's going on? I give you a half a bag of rice for a blowjob.
Okay, we can go on all night. Look at, I mean, people get gifts for this all the time. Some people even get paid for that. What do they call them? Oh, yeah. Rhymes with lookers?
Oh. They call them Liz.
Nothing wrong with that, Liz.
Ain't no shame in that game, huh?
There's
and you wonder how the show is funded because Liz is on the stripper
pole. Thank you. Aw, you're too kind. I do what I can, honey.
Nothing for free, right, Liz?
Nothing for free.
That's right.
Get
world.
The money up front.
And if
and no personal
shirt
check,
off,
bitch.
Yeah, you know, those shits bounce. Let me tell you. All right, so Tempest, shameless promoting. Where can they find you? What kind of exciting stuff do you have going on?
Well, I've got lots of appearances. Actually, next week we embark on our giant premiere tour for the season 7, which is going to be amazing. Normally they do a 2-city tour. This year we're doing a 9-city tour. So we'll be in Los Angeles, Las Vegas, Chicago, New York, Philadelphia, D.C., Miami, Austin, and New Orleans. I think I named
congratulations.
That's the boss events, right?
It is. That's the sort of premiere party.
I live in Philadelphia, and I got my tickets already, so I'm coming.
Oh, girl. Well, I don't want to break your heart, but they're splitting us in half for some of the cities, so,
so you
I might not
be
seeing you in Philadelphia. No.
Oh.
No. No, they put me on the the other half that goes to Austin and New Orleans, so.
Oh,
anyway.
Whatever. Anyway, keep going.
I know. But look, I'll be all over. I've got bookings happening all over Houston, Chicago, several days, San Francisco, you know, Florida, all over. So, you know, the thing is look, if people really want to see the girls from the show, you need to tell your local club promoters to bring us in. That's how it happens.
That's
it's that simple. They get the girls, get them in.
Well, where did they find you? Because you are the queen of all queens, and they want to know where they can find Tempest.
Oh, you're so sweet. TempestDuJour.com is my website. And I'm also on Facebook, you know, just Tempest DuJour. You'll find me there. I'm on Instagram, on Twitter, because they make me. I'm too fucking old for that shit, but they made me do all the social media stuff. Snapchat, whatever it is.
I'm going to sign up for one of the, her college courses. I got to do it. It'd be so
you
much fun.
Come be in my class. Just audit it.
I'd love it.
The pressure of a grade. Just come show up.
I would love it. You don't even know.
That'd be hilarious. That would be awesome. Well, thank
you so much
for your time today, Tempest. I really appreciate you stopping in on your business trip.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been so much fun. You guys are a hoot.
I was going to tell her, I'm going to be seeing Tempest in my dreams.
Well, that's the best place. Anything's possible in your dreams.
That's right.
Right? You could grow a penis like you always wanted in your dreams.
I know.
Well, she already has one, but don't tell her I said that.
I could be I could be a real boy. Pinocchio.
No, we love you just the way you are.
Thank you, darling.
Oh, my God. I'm so excited to talk to Tempest. She was so phenomenal and so, like, smart. And she's so handsome, too. Jeez.
Oh, I'm telling you. Be still, my beating heart.
Now
yeah,
all
that's
my
one good-looking man.
Gone. I know. I'm telling you. It's a shame. It's a shame. And there's a video that you love, too, isn't there, by Tempest?
Yeah, it's Tempest's Very Bad Day or something like that. We should put it up on our site. They can link to it. It's the talent from Tempest DuJour. And you know, she took something, a rough experience, and all you could do was laugh because it's fantastic. You know, her Very Bad Day and I love the Phyllis Diller song underneath, and it's got the whole Charlie Chaplin vibe going, but my favorite part is when she's working at the colonics clinic, and you're talking about having a bad day. Having a bad day, somebody explodes on you, and next thing you know, you're spitting out corn. I don't know. And she still smiles, so.
Liz, has no one ever shit in your face? I mean, come on.
Can't say that's happened to me, son. I'll have to put that on the old bucket list, huh?
All right, we're going to hand the microphone over to Brittany Maxwell with this week's Here's How moment. And we know that you have lots of one-night stands.
We just want to be the one you remember.
And have a good night, everybody. See you next time on Unleashed.
Have you been hoping for a style expert to help you have a fabulous life? The time has come to add sizzle to your style. With a hearty Here's How moment, it's time for Brittany Maxwell, America's domestic doyenne.
Brittany Maxwell here with this week's hints for gracious living. One of the most effective tools a film director has is the score. The music behind the action in a film is a great way to influence emotion. And create a mood. The music is usually instrumental, and in the case of smaller budget productions, it's licensed from a library. This music is called production music in America and library music in the UK. It's usually produced by studio musicians expressly for the purpose of being used in film and television productions. And once the style it was produced in goes out of fashion, it's generally forgotten. There are, however, people who have discovered the genre and are trying to save it. Compilations of vintage 50s, 60s, and 1970s production music are available to the general public now, and some of it is quite remarkable. This music is perfect for scoring your life. With the advent of the MP3 player, personal music is more prevalent than ever. We take it with us to the gym, on the plane, in the car, on the subway. We slip the players into speaker docks and play it at parties, in the park, at work, we walk through life with our choice of music as our constant companion. This instrumental music provides a great background for our daily existence. It doesn't compete with our activities, yet it has enough punch and personality to keep us interested in moving. Consider The Free Life, from Music for TV Dinners, the 1960s, from Scamp Records. It's perfect music for relaxed exertion, great for a walk to work. Mile High Swinger, from Cinephonic Soul Punch, from Motel Records, on the other hand, is perfect driving music, especially for urban nighttime driving. Its laid-back groove has just the right rhythm for tooling around town. Perfect for entertaining, Mexican Ding Dong, also from Music for TV Dinners, the 1960s, has just the right pitch to keep the party rolling along. And now that I've started listening to Workaday World from the original Music for TV Dinners when I'm at the supermarket, I couldn't imagine a trip there without it. This music is bright and optimistic. It's generally designed to make you feel good because so much of it was intended for use in advertising. Pick some up and see if it adds some spark to your routine. Next week, I'll share my tips about making the most of a trip to your local thrift shop. Until then, I'm Bree Maxwell. Bye now.
Find more from Breeny at BreenyMaxwell.com.
David Allen and Liz Stone Unleashed.
We are the crazy people.
Now you're getting in the mood for Unleashed.
We are the crazy people.
Now, sissy, that walk.